Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hello, and welcome. Or should I say welcome back to the Indie Football Podcast. I am Ed Mallion, sports editor of The Independent, and as ever, I'm flanked by two of my favourite people. To my left, chief football writer of The Independent, Miguel Delaney. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm happy to be here once again.
thank you also for welcoming me. And to my right, our man around North London, our Arsenal correspondent himself, occasionally seen in the boxing rings of London, the US, and beyond, it is Luke Brown.
Hello there. Not in the ring.
Not in the ring. No,
ringside.
Just kind of like just scratching around the edges.
I'm very scrawny, so I wouldn't last for very long.
Just, I mean, we could bring some boxing into today's show with regards to Anthony Joshua's comments about Cristiano Ronaldo.
Must not go there.
But I think it's best to just say, don't say stupid stuff, Anthony Joshua. Since the last podcast, we've had a lot of interesting action. What happened over the weekend? We had the North London derby. We had Liverpool versus Everton. We had Chelsea versus Fulham, if you count that as a derby. And
do
we had.
Do you not?
Yeah, kind of is, yeah. And we had another.
It couldn't even more of a derby, surely.
We had another Clasico.
Yeah.
But we
lost their edge a bit.
They've lost their edge a bit because Real Madrid aren't very good. What's that? Barcelona won all four of them in the last month.
Yeah.
So. Barcelona doing very well in La Liga.
Is that just going to... We might get into the Champions League, but is this all setting up so that Barca actually lose the game against Madrid they really want to win, which is like when they inevitably meet in the Champions League and Madrid just spawn the ultimate fluky win?
If you watch any of these Clasicos, it's hard to see how Real Madrid are going to...
But like, this is the nature of like Champions League.
The one thing I did like is that 22-year-old lad they've got, Reguilón, who... apparently was like calling out Messi and Suarez their face and like insulting both of them. It's like, I mean, like, yeah, if you're going to play a Clasico, you might as well go for it. It's either that or you be really nice to Messi and try and get a shirt afterwards so you can at least kind of keep that as a keepsake. But no, he went for the insults. He called Suarez ugly multiple times to his face, called him a rabbit, called Messi a flea, which I know is not the greatest insult. But yeah, well done to him. But let's move on. First, I want to talk Premier League, and then after that, we're going to go have a look at the Champions League power rankings ahead of a big week in Europe. So, Miguel, this weekend you were at Liverpool-Everton.
Yeah.
Where better to start?
It was actually, the start of the game was not the best by any means. It was quite poor. But it actually got really entertaining the second half because it had that kind of classic title run-in edge to it where kind of every moment, you know, felt the weight of all these 29 years, a little bit of the weight. Particularly the miss by Fabinho, I thought.
Yeah.
And maybe to a lesser extent, Matip. And then all those moments from Salah. But it was actually, it was a really entertaining game by then. Not a high quality game, but just very tense. And it's another bad draw for Liverpool, despite the fact it was at Goodison.
I got an impression that the roof would have come off if Everton had just nicked a goal, because they were desperate to kind of...
And it kind of felt like they sensed it as well.
And they apparently Everton fans were singing Blue Moon afterwards.
There was a lot, there was three Oasis songs played throughout the afternoon.
Three Oasis songs. Everton, you know, they had the odd chance, didn't they? They really were trying to play the spoiler role. Liverpool, I thought, did have the chances to win it, as you say, through Salah. What do we make of Salah's kind of... current run of form?
Off it. I mean, it just doesn't look... I mean, it's not just that he's missing chances, because I think... I actually raised this in the piece I did in the game yesterday, that top strikers actually miss more chances than people ever imagine. Like, Aguero actually misses a lot of chances, but I suppose the point isn't that they take them ruthlessly, it's that it's the persistence that it almost doesn't affect them. Whereas at the moment, Salah does look a bit affected. He's not sharp. And both of Liverpool's best two chances, beyond the Fabinho one, were ruined basically by his touches. One was just too sloppy out wide. The second one, when he was put through and goal by another Everton error, he was just too ponderous and allowed Michael Keane to get back. Looking great.
Obviously, it's a huge blow for them in terms of the title race. It's obviously 2 points drop behind City. But towards the end, I almost felt like it was a point. It felt almost a little bit like a point gain, because when you look at the players that Everton brought on, they obviously, the first half of them from them was pretty poor, but then the crowd really started getting behind them, the atmosphere changed completely. They brought on, for a mid-table team, they brought on Richarlison,
yeah,
Gomez and Tosin, who are like three really, really good players. And I thought towards the end, it looked like if any side was going to nick it, it was going to be Everton.
It was
most
weird,
of
Liverpool's
yeah. chances came quite early, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. And again, Everton kind of sensed a kind of a trepidation in Liverpool. But this is a growing problem. It's just at the moment, something's not right with them.
So Man City now very much in the driving seat. But looking ahead to the run-ins, you kind of spotted something about some of the teams that City have to face.
It's not so much. It's basically this crunch around April. Where, I mean, because already the one thing about City, to be fair, because of the way teams like West Ham and Bournemouth are setting up against them, every game has become a massive, massive kind of labour-intensive operation and like really kind of dragging it out of them. So they'll have that, but then if they go further in the FA Cup and Champions League, as we expect, it means they'll have a massive crunch in April with, in successive games, matches against Tottenham Hotspur and Manchester United. So, I mean, to come through all these victories is a big ask.
You still thinking City are favourites, though?
Yes, I still think they'll win it.
And what did you think, you know, overall of Liverpool after that game, talking to the players and coach, whatever, what impression did you get of their headspace right now?
Concerned, catty. Well, you could see at the end we're the way Henderson was shouting at Salah.
The way the ball boy.
Yeah.
And Jurgen Klopp.
And in Klopp's response, I can't remember who asked the question because I was studiously typing at the time. But he got really catty, Klopp, when he was asked about taking more risks. And well, I think the question was really about, you know, the amount of draws they've had and how they can stop these draws. But Klopp took it really badly. And he didn't just kind of snap back once. He snapped back three or four times in the one answer. Rory Smith made this point to us actually afterwards. Klopp's appeals for calm don't really match up too well with his own, his emotional demeanor, especially when it gets anyway testy.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. I mean, the game itself wasn't, I thought, that great, obviously. But in the end, you get a 0-0 draw that serves City quite well. The table, as we all know, is very tight at the top, and I think we're going to see it change a lot. 9 games to go, 1 point between them. One team that dropped off and dropped out of the title race, you have to say now, Luke Brown, it is Tottenham. You were at Arsenal, Tottenham at Wembley, another tube disaster. Getting
oh
there.
My God, Wembley Park's just the worst place in the world.
I hate going to games at Wembley.
I hate it's Wembley. Just, it's a terrible. Just lost, well, it didn't have much of a special feeling about it anyway, did it? But it's just lost that novelty now as well. It's just this miserable place.
Should have sold it to them, they're Americans, when you had the chance. Spurs Arsenal then. So Spurs out of the title race now, you'd say, but they should be good to hold on to Champions League football. Arsenal are chasing Champions League football.
Yep.
They're a point behind United, who snuck past Southampton with a 3-2 come from behind win. What do you make of this Arsenal situation right now? Because you can't help but feel they should have won it with that last minute penalty.
Yeah, they'll be gutted that they didn't win it. They were gutted when they didn't win it. I mean, the players look pretty dejected at full time. The fans are obviously completely miserable. But, you know, speaking to people after the game, there was a sense of after that kind of initial half an hour cool down period, I think Arsenal saw it as a good point away from home, and I think it was one of their best performances. I think you can argue that it was a better performance than when they actually beat Spurs at the Emirates, because that was one of those games where they went behind and they kind of crowd got behind them and they kind of won that through their emotion, and you know, it was a great performance and it kind of set the tone for Emery in a lot of ways. But this was like something we've not really seen before from Emery, and it was very kind of tactically robust, very disciplined. It was a tailor-made plan, and like for once their kind of pressing actually worked perfectly. And when you think the goal, Harry Kane's goal, was obviously incredibly controversial, and then they had like a chance to win it late on, I think they'll be really proud with this performance. And plus, they've just been playing well recently anyway. They destroyed Bournemouth, played well against Southampton. So I'm quietly confident that they'll make the top four, to be honest. Yeah, I really think they will. I think they're playing really well.
At the expense of?
It's hard, isn't it? I don't think Spurs have got it wrapped up yet. I really don't. If they get past Dortmund, they've already got a bit of a stretched squad. They've already got quite a lot of injuries and players coming back and players not in form. I mean, Wanyama was just atrocious. You know, they've got a lot of players.
It was weird that he was included, wasn't it? But the injuries kind of meant they had
to. Yeah, what else could he have done? He could have played Skip. Playing Skip in the North London derby is going to be, you know, challenging for him. I really don't think Spurs are definitely there. And I still think that United are going to hit a wall at some point. I can't see them just winning every game for the rest of the season. So I think Arsenal are definitely in with a shout.
United have lost Alexis Sanchez for most of the rest of the season, 6 to 8 weeks out, according to Pedro Onyeto, the Chilean physio. So if he's out for the rest of the season, United, I don't know if that's a huge blow for United, given how he's played, to be honest.
No.
But it's more the fact that they just have lost a lot of players. They've got a bit of an injury crisis. But going out of the Champions League this week will likely kind of help them, I guess, a little bit. And they are huge underdogs against PSG. So what are your movements this week for the Champions League, Miguel?
I'm going to Paris on Tuesday morning.
Paris Tuesday morning. Yeah. And so you're doing PSG Man United Tuesday, and then we've got a game Wednesday?
No, the game is Wednesday.
Oh, the game is Wednesday.
I'll be doing pressers tomorrow, so we all love a presser.
Well, in fact, tomorrow's Real Madrid-Ajax, which the first leg Ajax dominated and should have got better out
of. Do we think Ajax can knock them out still?
So, well, we're going to discuss this in a moment, the Champions League power rankings that I rejigged this morning, so we can. I just wanted to throw it over to Dortmund, where Jack and Johnny are, and that they've just been sat at the press conferences ahead of Dortmund-Tottenham tomorrow. So we'll just hear from them, and then we'll carry on with the Champions League chat.
We're at Signal Iduna Park. I'm Jonathan Liu, and I'm with Jack Pitt-Brook. We've just come out of Mauricio Pochettino's press conference ahead of Borussia Dortmund against Tottenham tomorrow evening. Jack, what did you make of what we just heard and saw from Mauricio?
My main impression is that he didn't want to talk about the game. Pochettino gave us a very long talk about fixture scheduling, which is something that we hear quite a lot of from English coaches when they're playing in Europe, saying that English teams don't get enough help, that foreign teams get teams moved, whereas English teams have less and less preparation time, which makes these games harder for them. Like, I'm sure it's true, I'm not disputing that at all, but managers usually only say that for a reason. And for Pochettino to spend so much of the 25-minute press conference that we just had here talking about fixtures made me think maybe he's feeling a bit nervous about the game tomorrow. Maybe he is worried about the possibility of Spursing it up.
Well,
which is like probably on the pitch is the biggest and only question really going into the game, given that 3-0 lead they have in the first leg.
Yeah, I mean, just to recap, the game's happening on a Tuesday night. They played Arsenal at Wembley on Saturday lunchtime. You can't really have much more of a gap than that, unless, you know, Pochettino was complaining about Dortmund playing Friday night. That is not something that's going to happen with regularity. And this is something that you hear managers complaining about. But 3.5 days, if you have a decent-sized squad, and, you know, that's obviously another question, should be enough to prepare a Champions League game when you're 3-0 up from the first leg. And it does, I think, raise the question. That is very much the burning question here. Are Spurs going to Spurs it?
Well, Johnny, you're an expert on Spurs Spursing it, and you've written at length about the possibility of Spurs Spursing it, looking at previous case studies of Spurs Spursing it in European games. Can you talk us through what you found and what you expect to happen tomorrow?
Yeah, well, I mean, just off the top of my internet browser history, you've got Spurs 3, Manchester City 4, Spurs 3, Manchester United 5, both of those giving up 3-0 leads in a single game. You have the League Cup semi-final against then-Championship Burnley in 2009 when they won the first leg 4-1, lost the second leg 3-0 in 90 minutes, would have gone out had the away goals rule been in force before then scoring, I think, in the 118th minute. 3-0 at home in the first leg against Inter Milan in the Europa League in 2012-13, then somehow losing the second leg 4-1 with Adebayor scoring in extra time. That's before you even take into account, you know, 4-0 against Inter at the San Siro in 2010 before Bale scores his hat-trick, or going 3-0 down against Young Boys. Tottenham are a team that for various reasons, I think partly tactical but mostly psychological, tend to start very badly, and when they get into what I suppose a continental manager might term a negative moment, they can very easily lose control in what fans of other clubs would find a very comical fashion.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can say with no doubt whatsoever that Tottenham will be 2-0 down after half an hour tomorrow night. You can put the mortgage on that. And then we're going to have, I think, a terrifying second half in which Tottenham will basically have to score, because if they don't score, it is inevitable they will concede the third and the game will go to extra time. Of course, if Tottenham do score, then they'll be 4-0 up and Dortmund will need to score 5 on the night to go through. So, and given what we've seen from Tottenham recently, that is basically a string of bad performances ever since the first leg win at Wembley. And
not won a game.
Not yet. Given that they're looking tired and leggy, there's not much in midfield. They've basically been, frankly, I mean, even going back beyond the first leg, I think it's fair to say they've been bailed out by Kane and Son for the last few months, really, and haven't put together a complete 90-minute performance for a very long time. I think they're massively up against it tomorrow. I think Dortmund, you know, Dortmund have got some incredible attacking players. Marco Reus is back, who was out for the first leg. Jadon Sancho can do whatever he wants on his day. Dortmund have no option but to throw what you might call the absolute kitchen sink at Tottenham from the start. And it's, I'm sure they will score early. And I think that so much of what happens tomorrow is going to come, is going to hinge on Tottenham's ability to kind of keep their head above water and not to lose their minds just when they happen to concede, because it is going to get very tough for them.
Yeah, it's a question of game management, I suppose. Even though you'd obviously rather be Tottenham at this stage, there is something quite liberating in Dortmund's task, which is really quite simply you have to score three goals and you have to go for it. And having that clarity of purpose can actually really unfetter a team. If you think about when Tottenham have played best at their best this season, it's been, for example, at the Nou Camp when they had to go for it, or against Inter Milan at Wembley when they had to go for it. Having to manage a game takes quite different skills. And for all the great football that Tottenham have played in the last two or three years, it's when they've had to manage a game, had to manage a big occasion like this and show a certain maturity, patience sometimes, composure, judgment on the ball. These are the things that we haven't always seen from them, and I think that's going to be the big test. Dortmund will just lay into them, and they have to be prepared for that. They can't just sort of tap the ball around their own half for 10-15 minutes. Dortmund aren't going to let them do that, and if they try and do that, it's very likely they're going to get forced into an error. So I mean, it's weird that we're talking about Spurs in this way, but you have to be slightly anxious at least.
Yeah, I mean, the counter-argument to that is that literally the only time in the last few years that we've seen Tottenham play with patience, experience, nous, game management, was the first leg of this tie, where they didn't really play very well in the first half. Dortmund had the better of the chances at the start. Spurs hung in there, scored at the right time, took advantage, and then went for the jugular right at the end when Dortmund were tiring. Basically showing that kind of the experience required to take advantage of the moments when the game is in the balance, which is precisely the skill that Tottenham have lacked in big games over the years. You know, looking back at big Premier League games against Chelsea, at FA Cup semi-finals against Chelsea, Manchester United, League Cup semi-final against Chelsea, League Cup final against Chelsea, Champions League knockout game against Juventus. You know, these are the games where Tottenham have messed it up over the years. Would you say this is maybe the biggest game of the Pochettino era, or one of them, probably in the top five? And it will be interesting to see whether or not those kind of first hints that we saw in the first leg that Tottenham can play with a bit of big game experience might well show. That I think is what it's all going to come down to.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, you know, this is kind of a footballer's answer here, but it's definitely up there.
Is it bang up there?
It's bang up there. I mean, I would say the game at the Nou Camp was just enormous for so many reasons. Yeah, partly because it was the Nou Camp, but partly because it was such a makeshift team. If you remember, Kyle Walker-Peters started a right back in that game. But it seems like in the Pochettino era, these games seem to keep coming thick and fast, and Tottenham have always sort of flattered to deceive a little bit in them. I remember sitting in a bar in St. Lucia watching the first leg. I was out there covering the cricket. I was out there with Paul Newman, the Daily Mail's cricket correspondent, who's a big Spurs fan, and Stephen Harmison, who isn't, and thinking, well, this is incredibly tight. This is a really, really tense game. Dortmund as likely to nick something on the break, and then it's one all as Spurs are to, you know, to score a second. And in many ways, 3-0 kind of flattered them. And it's possible that it's lulled people into a certain sense of security here, because the expectation is all on them to go through, and that can be a dangerous thing.
Great. I think we're going to sign off from there, listeners. Thank you for joining us, and please abuse us if our predictions come untrue on Twitter afterwards. Thanks very much. Bye.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Thank you, guys. In Germany, I did cut off Miguel in his stride before that. What you were going to say?
Right. Sorry. Actually, in fact, I've just remembered this is something we can try again this week. In April 2017, I did a piece on why it's so difficult for teams to get through having lost a first leg at home. Uh-huh. In fact, it's only happened 6 times in history.
Great.
So that's obviously relevant to Ajax and Manchester United this week.
So it's difficult. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
I think Ajax probably won't be able to do it. PSG looked United's equals, I thought, in that first leg. I mean, you know better than I do, but I thought they looked like pretty level. I thought it was more of a 1-0 game than a 2-0 game, but it's hard to see how United overcome that, right, with so many injuries.
Yeah. I was actually just looking at my piece there about why it's so difficult to win away from home. to win having been beaten at home. I suppose, yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing about it is the amount of pace they've lost, given that PSG seemed, of everything United had, particularly conscious of that. Then they don't have that, or they're lacking most of that pace. But then they're also lacking one of their main sources of ingenuity, which is Paul Pogba. So it's asking a lot, especially against a really canny looking PSG team. There's two things I think are possible, though, that are relevant to this game. First of all, just the whole odd dynamic of the past few seasons, where suddenly situations that were pretty much manageable for most of European Cup history, like massive away wins or massive turnovers, suddenly came really common in the last few years. So we obviously had Barca PSG, which is going to be referenced in this game, no doubt. We had Roma Barcelona. Even one that didn't actually come true, but still created the sort of at least attention we want on Wednesday. Juventus Real Madrid last season, which I was at, when Juventus brought Real Madrid right to the brink. So from that perspective, it does feel as if kind of as if this kind of just energy in that sense has kind of infused the Champions League over the past few years. And I suppose the one thing is, if United do get one goal, fluke one goal, then suddenly the whole complexion changes in that regard. Then there's a tentativeness about PSG. But then it's still about how Solskjaer, what he can come up with. I mean, and to be fair to Solskjaer, is one of the reasons why he's probably going to get the job now. Not just the kind of run results they've had, but also how he's reacted to different tactical situations. But this is probably his biggest challenge in that sense.
Yeah. I'll go through the Champions League power rankings that I rejigged this morning at the commandment of Ben Burrows, our news editor. I can't remember who I put where. So what we've got... These are ranked in their likelihood of winning the whole competition, just so you know. And then you can tell me if you think I'm too low, too high, or about right on these. So 16, I've got Schalke, who lost 3-2 at home to Man City and seemingly have no chance. About right?
Yep.
Borussia Dortmund have dropped from 10th all the way to 15th. Thumped by Spurs. But they do have the talent to overcome a three-goal deficit. And they... are now at home.
I hate to use words Spursy and bottle, but this feels like it could be the ultimate Tottenham performance away from home in Europe.
Yeah, so it's fine. So
they've got a slim chance.
They're up against it.
More than Schalke.
But I think they've got a better chance than their rivals from the Ruhr region of Deutschland. 14th, Manchester United dropped from 9th. I've got
Yeah. I mean,
they're the joint biggest fallers.
It's like Sunday, yeah.
if we're basing it on likeliest to go out, then yes, you'd have to have that.
14th, right?
Yeah.
And there's no Pogba as well. That's the thing, is it's like you're not even at full strength.
Oh, Mbappe on the counter-attack as well.
A tough trip to PSG where you're going to be pressing and you've got Mbappe on the
opportunity. He was ridiculous on the weekend, so he's going to be up for it.
He's unreal. He's the second best player in the world now.
Ajax.
For me.
Ajax, I've given a two-place bump from 15th to 13th just because they outplayed Real Madrid. But VAR really cost them and some lax finishing. So they've got a chance, but they're kind of in trouble. Porto, Roma are next to each other. Porto in 12th. They lost 2-1 in Rome, so it's not over. But do we think that they actually have the firepower to do anything in the Champions League this year?
Can't see it. I think you've got to favour Roma. They got quite a fortunate goal at the end of the game as well, didn't they? So
Roma are a bit of a wild card. They got to the semis last year, of course, where they played Liverpool. The kid Zaniolo, everyone's talking about Patrick Schick as well, talented player. They've got the narrow advantage heading into the second leg. But do we see Roma? I mean, Roma, you know, if they're in the quarterfinals, they're not far off.
Yeah, you don't want to face them.
I mean, you definitely don't want to have to go there because it's going to be loud, it's going to be pyrotechnic, it's going to be everything. Juve dropped 5 places to 10th from 5th. Is that too low? Is that not low enough?
I was very disappointed with them, I have to say, against. I mean, there's still the potential that, again, like the United game, except they're at home, one goal and it suddenly changes, and then you might see the full force of Juve, Ronaldo, all the rest of it. But I was very disappointed with them against Atletico.
They were very poor, and you've got to score basically at least 2 goals, probably 3, against one of the best defences in Europe over the last decade. Mm. So I can't really see it. Ahead of them in 9th, we have Lyon, who were 14th last week. But they rattled City during the group stage and they got a creditable 0-0 draw against Barcelona.
I'm slightly concerned for Barca.
Why are you concerned for Barca?
They've been so unconvincing in Europe in the last, basically since they last won it in 2015. The one big, some great group stage performance, that kind of says it all, and the 6-1.
You don't need to be convincing in Europe to win.
That's true. But this is the point. But then Barca keep kind of slipping up in games. I mean, going into Roma last season. Then suddenly after the PSG results, they played Juventus and just froze in that match in a really weird way. I mean, there's still the Messi factor ultimately, which kind of makes skews every game, and they should still go through. But yeah, I'm slightly concerned for them.
I've got Tottenham.
Leon are a good size.
I've got Tottenham at 8th in this, right? Which I think might seem a little harsh, and some of the comments I've had were that this is a little harsh. They were 11th before. They're as good as in the quarters, essentially.
That's 8.
But yeah, we don't know what their ceiling is, and 8th reflects their strong chance of progression. But are they any better than 8th in the Champions League, do you think? And when we get to the quarterfinals, I guess one of Roma, Porto will be in there, and you could possibly put Spurs ahead of them in maybe like a 7th place. But am I being too harsh on Spurs here?
No, I think that's fair enough. It massively depends on who comes back for them as well, how many players they can get back up to full fitness, and also I suppose the new ground could be a bit of a factor. Whether that becomes a strength or a weakness will be quite interesting to.
Do you think so? There was one report today. I didn't see whose report it was, that they've had their last game at Wembley. Was it their last home game at Wembley?
Yeah, the confidence of that. Yeah.
And where was that report?
Standard.
Standard. Okay. So what are we saying? What are we saying? So if they go into their new stadium for the Champions League quarterfinal, do you think that's a you covered the Spurs a lot, Miguel? Do you think that's a boost for them, or do you think it might take some time to adapt to these new
surroundings? There is maybe a slight risk in having maybe a first game in that.
Would it be the actual first game as well?
They should do. But even then, like, you need to kind of bet into these stadiums. Yeah. It would be a huge event now, to be fair. And of course, the atmosphere could take on.
We should talk to some players before the next, before that game happens, basically, and ask them, how important is that? Like, does it matter? Doesn't matter at all. Because you go to weird stadiums all the time and win games.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean? Like, but I'd be interested in hearing from players who, for example, moved to the Emirates or maybe the Wanda or whatever.
I remember there was that when West Ham moved stadium. I actually remember a quote stood out from Jason Dodd at Southampton, who talked about when they moved from the Dell to St Mary's. It took them a long time. Even like taking a throw in was so alien for a bit because the Dell was right behind. And I suppose, so when you're doing it from time to time and you go to strange away or kind of curious away grounds in that sense, you adopt a different mentality. Yet when it's meant to be your home ground, it just means it's just kind of, it's going to take a while before you're fully kind of comfortable somewhere.
The thing that I think will be most interesting with Spurs moving ground is that in all previous examples, it's been clubs moving from one area to a completely different area. It was with Spurs, it's literally on top of the old ground. Like the new stadium, it feels like the kind of big brother of the old stadium. It's freakishly similar, and the diameters of the pitch and stuff is all very similar. So it'll be interesting to see whether, that kind of consistency remains, or whether the players respond to it like a completely new place.
Dimensions are not diameter; it's not a circle. But I get your point. The thing is, it's like the Dell to St Mary's is very, very different because it's like an old traditional ground to a brand spanking new shiny thing, which is kind of like what you were saying as well, Luke, about the areas. You know, you're not moving to a new area either. You're not like having to find your way there for the first time in the car. You know, this is where you've been before. Leaving behind Wembley for this stadium, from what I've seen of this new stadium, which looks very impressive, I have to say, it could potentially be the best stadium in London, full stop. If they go to this new stadium and, you know, it looks like there's a very steep rake on the seats, which I love. So, like, the crowd will kind of be right behind the fans, right behind the players, sorry. And that seems like a good thing.
That's what makes the Bernabeu the best stadium in Europe.
Well, I think the Bernabeu is certainly one of the best venues in Europe, just because when you're there, it feels like you're on top of it, and it feels like a proper event.
Also, without getting too kind of, you know, snobby about the whole thing, the fans who are going to be in that ground are going to be proper fans. They're going to be they'll have been on the season ticket waiting list for a hell of a long time. They're all going to be people who have moved over from White Hart Lane. Whereas I think definitely this season, when Spurs first moved to Wembley in that first year, a lot of fans went with them. The atmosphere could get really, really impressive. The atmosphere on Saturday for the North London Derby wasn't great at all. And it's because you've got so many kind of, you know, day trippers and fans who aren't necessarily Spurs fans kind of just mingling in. And the atmosphere's just been so flat. Yeah.
Wembley's bad full stop. It's one of the worst, unfortunately, it's one of the worst places you can watch football, I think, in terms of you're so far away from the pitch, like just as the crow flies, like if you just drew a line from the centre spot to where your seat is, it's massive compared to, for example, the new Spurs stadium, which is built exactly so the fans would be on top of the kind of the players and stuff. So it is interesting to me that if that is a boost, then they're a complete wild card in the Champions League. You know, Pochettino, Kane, Ali, Eriksen, Vertonghen, Alderweireld. You could argue, Lloris, you could argue these guys are all like absolutely elite footballers. Elite footballers who, you know, why couldn't they win the Champions League? But it's when you have the problem like Sunday or Saturday lunchtime, when you've got to stick Wanyama in there because you're not sure if Skip can handle it. If that is a question they have in the Champions League quarterfinals, they're dead, right? So I guess eighth probably is a fair place for them. Seventh is an interesting one, Miguel, by Munich. 0-0 draw with Liverpool in the first leg at Anfield, going back to Munich. You're going to the second leg, I believe. But this is not a vintage Bayern side.
No. But yeah, I do wonder whether they have a bit of that kind of muscle memory in Europe. They were very good first half against Liverpool, then trailed off a little bit, in which maybe you saw both sides of Bayern. On one side, the fact that this has been such an accomplished team in Europe for so long. Then the other side, the fact it's a waning force.
Who did you like out of that Bayern team?
I mean, Thiago, I think, is basically...
Hell of a player, isn't he?
I'm actually, to a certain degree...
Was Goretzka playing?
No. He was brought on, wasn't he? Actually, I've been to so many matches since then, I actually can't remember the details. I don't know, they just... I slightly fancy them to take advantage of what Liverpool are at the moment.
Which is a little bit fragile.
Yeah.
A little bit... I mean...
I've wavered in this game.
I think Simon Hughes wrote about last week was... You know, this slight lack of creativity in midfield, which is a concern. I asked someone, a former player, about it the other day, and he said, you know, kind of dismissively, like, oh, who needs a creativity in midfield when you've got those three up front? It's like, well, I mean, you do need a midfield still.
Yeah.
It is still a fairly essential piece of the pie. I've got Liverpool in at sixth, just because I think Bayern and Liverpool is too difficult to split right now. Liverpool dropping from fourth though, but that for me is on a complete knife edge. You know, that could be literally like a VAR decision which turns that tie. I hope it isn't, because I think we're seeing already the problems that are going to come with VAR. The fallout from this Harry Kane goal, the offside.
That's the most tedious thing.
But we're going to get this every weekend with the VAR stuff, because the thing is that what you're doing now is you're taking the rules and you're dissecting them down to a millimeter, where they weren't ever intended for this. You know, like, and it's what happened with the Ajax Real Madrid game in the first one. Like, technically, according to the rules, you could just about say that, it was offside because Tadic was in Courtois' way. But man, there's no way that was offside. Like, it wasn't offside. Like, that's not how the law was meant to be written. The law was meant to be written.
Gretzky did not complain that game. I was right.
All the people who were waiting to see if Gretzky was playing or not. Yes. But no, I think that is a big problem. You know, I didn't actually have a strong view on VAR before. I thought it was kind of a boring debate. But that game really made me realise, you know, it's not necessarily VAR that's the problem, but VAR is going to be a microscope under which we're going to be looking at the rules every weekend. So and if the rules aren't right, then that's a problem.
I'll tell you what, so much for the bollocks about, oh, it's going to eliminate controversy. The controversy talking about the ref, it's going to fucking create more. I shouldn't curse, yeah. Sorry. it's going to create more of it, and it's going to be even worse.
It'll be interesting to see what teams actually like, who it hampers the most, because you feel like City's kind of persistent fouls, and you know, Spurs get up to quite a lot of mischief in the box and stuff with pulling players and pushing players. It's going to definitely impact on some teams more than others.
I'd like to see the centre backs who kind of end up tugging everyone.
Yeah,
if we have a bit of a reckoning for these centre backs, and then they all have to stop it and try it. Yeah, Mustafi would be funny. Fifth on the Champions League power rankings. Amazing, we are still talking about this. Atletico Madrid up from seventh.
Yeah,
harsh.
No.
Fifth,
no.
Only fifth. They just beat Juve, probably one of the best teams in the competition, 2-0.
I suppose the one thing you would say that there might be a backlash, not a backlash, but maybe a response from Juve, so it's not quite job done, even because it actually should have been 3 or 4th with Atletico.
Yeah.
Had it been that, then maybe. And you do. I don't think they'll regret it, but it's not out of bounds.
And the only reason I've got them 4th, you know, I love Atletico, and I would have had them number 1, to be honest, if it was me being unreasonable. Instead, I've got 4th, Paris Saint-Germain, yeah. Who I think have to go up from 6th. They beat Man United.
Maybe even a little higher.
Beat Man United 2-0 at Old Trafford. And they got Neymar to come back potentially after them.
And they've got Mbappe.
And they've got Mbappe, who is
the best force in the competition after Messi.
Real Madrid at 3.
No, get them well down.
So who would you bump Real Madrid behind? PSG and Atletico?
Tottenham. Yeah, but I'd put them in 8. I think they're atrocious.
You know, they've got Sergio Ramos, right?
Yeah. You know. But they have this whole Champions League record, but they're... And at least, I mean, you can't rule it out with them, basically.
Sergio Ramos might have to score the winner himself this year. He might have to do it. He might have to score the winner in a 1-0 Champions League final.
He's got two.
Where's the final? Baku.
No, Madrid. It's Madrid.
Oh, it's Madrid. Sorry. Europa League is Baku, isn't it?
Yeah.
Arsenal versus Chelsea.
I already had a look in the flights for that. They're not pretty.
Terrible. No, yeah. I remember at the start of the season, they were saying that the Azerbaijan, like, tourist authority, whatever, were going to suppress the flight and hotel prices to make it affordable for people to come. I did a little check, and that does not appear to be what's happened in the slightest.
Can you imagine if it is Arsenal and Chelsea to get
through? Arsenal versus Chelsea in Baku.
Yeah, more importantly, Mkhitaryan can't even play.
Oh, yeah. Henrik Mkhitaryan will be unable to enter Azerbaijan. And we've got a Champions League playoff there, where hopefully if Arsenal and Chelsea finish 5th and 6th, and then the winner gets in the Champions League, that's what you want. Yeah. Like a really brilliant final day.
How many would we send to that?
I mean, like, everyone. Yeah, trip to Azerbaijan for the lads. Ranking the last 16 in the Champions League, number 2, Barcelona, down from 1 after a goalless draw in Lyon. And that means number 1, of course, is Manchester City. 3 away goals and a lead going into the second leg have City edging ahead of Barcelona. What are you hating the most out of that?
I think City probably are the best team in Europe, but I do think their schedule will cause them to not win this quadruple. They'll fall at least one.
You've
of
said
the
they'll win 3. You've told me that before. You think they'll win 3. And Lukey...
But I think they'll miss one of the big 2. They'll miss either the league or the Champions League.
Okay. Very safe predictions from Miguel. Luke?
I think City should be way down.
Why?
I've just never been particularly convinced by them in Europe. Plus, they were poor in the group stage. They weren't particularly convincing in the group stage. I just think Atletico should be...
Number one, yeah.
Barcelona and Atletico. And like Mick said, Real Madrid all the way down.
I just
think Real Madrid have lost that ability to just... You know, like even last season in Champions League, they would just be poor and then win the game. I'm not really sure they've got that.
The Clásico the other day where they were a better team actually against Barcelona, the one on Wednesday, was it night? Wednesday night?
Yeah.
And Vinicius Junior, who's obviously the... They have to gamble on people who could become superstars now rather than necessarily buying in superstars. And Vinicius was brilliant, and like he does cause so much trouble, and he's clearly going to be a very good player. But what they just didn't have a finisher, and they used to have the best finisher of a generation, possibly the best finisher we've ever seen in Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, certainly one of the greatest goal scorers that football's ever seen. They used to have him, and they didn't really replace him at all. And Karim Benzema has obviously seen an uplift in his totals this year, but it's just, you know, it's easy enough to diagnose when you just watch them play.
Yeah.
Like, man, if they had someone who could finish, like, say, the greatest finisher of all time, then this would not be a problem.
And though, I mean, if all the other wonderful players they have in their squad were playing at the top of their game, then fair enough, you could maybe take out Ronaldo and the likes of Bale, or, you know, just the many midfielders, we'd kind of drag them through. But the fact is that Ronaldo's gone and everybody else is struggling and having, like, really poor individual seasons. So I just don't see how they're suddenly going to beat three of Europe's best sides.
And I want to talk about Gareth Bale as well, actually, just because it's been clear when you read the Spanish papers a lot, and tune into their media as well. Actually, there's important television shows and radio shows in Spain, and a lot of the, you know, we've talked about this before. There are two main papers based in Madrid. There are two main papers based in Barcelona, and it's nothing like here. Like, they are very much on the sides of their clubs, and they do their things more like they do in Italy, where, like, certain papers are more behind certain clubs, like Tutto Sport is like the big Juve one. If you watch the shows which are linked to Real Madrid from behind the scenes, or listen to the shows that are from Real Madrid behind the scenes, or if you read the journalists who are well connected to Real Madrid, it is very clear that they want Gareth Bale out in the club now. It's very clear this spring, Miguel, like, you know, you've read the stuff as well, they want him gone.
Yeah.
But for every year for the last 3 years, we've been hearing the same noises in February, March, that Bale would be definitely gone this summer.
They'd produce a winner in the semi or the final.
Yeah. And I think it feels to me like the difference is that now the club have decided that he's got to go this time. But how do you make that happen, considering the contract they've given him? And I think his relative decline in value, considering his age now, he's best part of 30. He's got an injury past, a big injury past, which is one of the reasons why he's never really clicked at Real Madrid, apart from all the obvious stuff as well. So what do you see happening with that? Because it is a peculiar situation where if Real Madrid didn't want Bale,
yeah,
suddenly there's a lack of suitors. And yeah, for the last, well, 4 or 5 years, every club has been falling over themselves to sign Gareth Bale.
It could come down to this, but Madrid are going to have to take the hit that Florentino Perez never wants to take. Because he's usually very good at getting players he doesn't want out at a high price. Di Maria.
Ozil.
Yeah, Ozil, yeah.
But it's the same rumours. Mm. So the funny thing is that usually... Mm. They start the rumours, they plant these rumours about usually womanising, going out, drinking, kind of being caught out late at night, not turning up for training, all these things. They can't do it with Bale because they've established the reputation of Bale as a hermit who only plays golf and PlayStation. Yeah, they call him the golfer, you know, and he doesn't speak Spanish well and all this sort of stuff. So everyone knows he's not going out and he's not tired. That's what they started about Ozil and plenty of people besides. So they're going to have to go a different tack with him, and it looks like they're going down the, you know, the club are tired of his injuries, lack of effort to integrate. That's why these stories leak out. That, for example, Bale was one of only three players not to turn up to the team dinner because it was too late for him to eat, apparently. It was like 10:30 p.m. And Jonathan Barnett, his agent, told the ESPN today that, you know, it's all rubbish.
He said that. Right, he said that right through, hasn't he? That's always
Course, he's always said that, and he's kind of a no nonsense guy, Barnett. Mm. But you're looking at this Bale situation now, and if Real Madrid do want him out, then do you think they force the issue at a lower price and try and make out what they'll try and do is make out that this is essential for the club to move forward, that they need to get rid of him?
Yeah.
And do you think this is part of the trying to scrape together the money for Neymar? Because they don't have the money to sign Neymar right now.
No, it's...
With all the noise, they don't have the money to do it.
And they need a bit of a clear out in that regard if they are, as much for the wage bill. It could come down to offering him some sort of cut price deals elsewhere. Or even, I know people are going to get a bit wary of exchange deals and how often they're mooted and how rarely they happen. But I think there's one situation where Real will... I mean, that's one thing I heard, that basically when they've been trying to move for any player, like, for example, Eriksen or anyone like that, they've been looking maybe to offload Bale as well, because it makes sense to them, but doesn't necessarily make sense for the other side.
And then what happens is, the good thing about those sorts of deals is you can inflate the value. You can say, we're buying Eriksen for 100 million and we're part exchanging Bale for 80 or whatever, whereas it's actually like, that's not really what's happening. But you can kind of smudge the details a little bit. If Bale were to leave the summer, finally, having been confident every year for the last three that he was going to go, where do you think he would end up?
Well, I think Manchester United have lost all interest now. And he was always the kind of the expected destination for so long. Spurs, I can see them going for that sort of contract.
Contract's so big.
Yeah. Unless basically there has to be a massive climb down from Bale's party as well, but I can't really see
that. There's no way Bale's accepting a contract that isn't absolutely enormous, because he's on so much money right now.
Spurs contracts are always made up so much in like bonuses, aren't they? Like performance related bonuses, and Bale's not going to sign one of those if there's a potential he's going to be injured for like half the season.
Would you want to sign Bale at 30 on anything north of 200 grand a week?
He's in no way a Pochettino player as well. Like, I know it's the easy answer to say Tottenham because of the history, but he's in no way a Poch player. Poch's got no kind of track record of really even working with a player like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually think Arsenal or Chelsea makes more sense. Almost
Arsenal
anywhere
can't
else.
Him, surely.
No, I mean, Arsenal don't look like they've got the money to me. No. But I don't think Stan's going to...
I don't really think Arsenal need him. But yeah, I mean, Chelsea, I suppose, is the other...
Chelsea, because they might be losing Hazard, you could make it part of the Hazard deal. But it would need to be very friendly to Chelsea, in my opinion, because I just don't understand how you're taking on that contract. But it's one to watch, because it appears... if you follow the Spanish media quite closely, they've decided that he has to go. And for that reason, I'll certainly be following it. As you probably heard during this episode, before this episode and after this episode, we have a new sponsor in the shape of Beer 52. You know, if you like your craft beer and you like free beer, let's be honest, that's probably the most important bit. If you like free beer, then make sure you go straight to their website. It's beer52.com/indie. And you just pay postage and packaging, and they're going to send you a free box of beer, which is excellent. I haven't had a free box of beer yet, but when I do get it, I will give you a full review on the podcast. Before we go, gents, any other business? Luke, do you have any points you'd like to make about football or life in general?
Just that, you know, everything's going well at the minute. Glad to have spent the last hour, you two guys, and let's crack on. Have a good week.
A beautiful moment really there as Luke got a tear in his eye, thanking us for our time. Miguel, have you got anything you'd like to say?
No.
You've got a big top of the table clash at five-a-side tonight.
Yeah, we do, yeah. Let's hope we win that one.
So all thoughts with you for that. Going to need another long-range scorcher. As ever, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Please rate and review. Indie Minds, don't forget to subscribe. It's just a matter of pennies per day to access extra ebooks, events, and award-winning journalism from The Independent. And while we're saying award-winning, I nearly bloody forgot.
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan Liu, Sports Columnist of the Year at the Sports Journalist Association Awards last Monday. We celebrated, as you quite might imagine, in style. And we're also highly commended, basically second overall, for the Sports Website of the Year, which we couldn't have done if you guys hadn't visited the website and then listened to this podcast. So thank you all for that. Thank you, Miguel and Luke, for coming in today. And thanks to Beer 52 for their continued support. Goodbye.